Okay, so we're live. Welcome to the Magic Minds podcast. I'm Matt Bourke. On today's show, I will be joined by the legend, Graeme Merrigan from What's the Story podcast. If you haven't heard of this podcast, check them out. It's an absolute stomper of a podcast, I must say. And Graeme himself is an absolute legend. Sound lad. Him and Dan on the podcast, they own tremendous work. This was an absolute eye-opener for me. We touch on all sorts of things. Irish soccer, boxing, Tony McGregor, Conor McGregor, Roy Keane, disability sports, disabilities, equality, marriage referendum. I don't know where we got all the ideas, but just things kept flying out and we got to discuss them. It was brilliant. Graeme is an absolute legend, a sound lad. You know, he's an excellent advocate for people with disabilities, people in wheelchairs such. He himself is a wheelchair user, a basketball player. He's just an advocate for any kind of inequalities in life, you know. He's a ballsy kind of person, as they say, and he's not afraid to speak his mind and give his opinion. And how the interview came about was I've been following him on Twitter, and I like his Twitter feed, he's funny as fuck. So we've been following, and I had it in the back of my mind that I'd love to interview this lad, because I love his attitude to things, and he's not afraid to throw a cat amongst a pigeon, as they say. And it came about where Mark Pollock done a TED Talk, and Mark Pollock is somebody that is paralysed, but he's also blind, and he done a talk on TED Talks with his partner, wife, I'm not so sure, and a lot of people with disabilities, wheelchair users, were not too happy about it, none too plus, as Tony McGregor would say, and Graeme got in contact with me and says he'd like to have the chats with me about it, so I was absolutely delighted, not only to talk to him about that, but just to get somebody on the show with a background in podcasting and a successful podcast. I think they've won awards as well, and they're quite popular in Ireland at the moment. So it was absolutely an honour to get him on the show. And Graeme is a sound lad. And we kind of have interviewed similar people like Frankie Gaffney, Steve Gunn, and he knows Mark Barry, the coach. And so we kind of were in the same circle, which was brilliant. So the podcast is brilliant. As I say, we touch on loads and loads of different things within the podcast. It's really, really fulfilled chat, and it was great. And you'd know he was doing this a long time, because he's super cool, and it was just like sitting down having a chat with a mate of mine. You know, maybe, I don't know if that's probably from a working class thing, we just hit it off. But he was an absolute sound thing, and I learned so much from him in that interview. So I was absolutely delighted to have him on board. But the thing what we really want to talk about, as I say, was the Mark Pollock stuff. And we covered that in it. And I have to be honest with you, I've seen that Graeme had put that up on his feed, that the show, and he was pretty pissed off about it. So he didn't have a chance to listen to it. I liked his post. And what I liked about it was that he's not afraid to give his opinion. He's not afraid to stand out for something that he believes in. And that's what I liked. But I hadn't actually listened to it. So what I done then, I listened to the interview, and from my perspective, me as a person, I really liked it. I loved the advance in science, and I loved the story about him and his missus. But I, as a person, missed the point about the impact that has on people with disabilities, i.e. wheelchair users. And that's okay, because I'm not a wheelchair user, but I'd love to hear from someone else's point of view. But the one thing I did take from it was that I found it to be elitist. But it was brilliant then to have Graeme on the show to give us his perspective as a wheelchair user. And he made some outstanding points. And I loved that, and it really opened my eyes. Because sometimes we do that. I looked at that from a science point of view and went, yeah, this is brilliant. This is brilliant. You're trying to push boundaries. But while you're doing that, you are leaving people from other walks of life out. You know, you're forgetting people in wheelchairs that don't have the funds or the money or the access to this kind of stuff. And Graeme opened my eyes like a floodlight to all this stuff. And it was really, really valid. And it's a great conversation. Hopefully that you guys will get the same from it. Again, as well, we touch on some stuff in the show, such as podcasts. You know, there's Jim from FM 104 saying there was basically too many podcasts in Dublin, which I think is a pile of shite. That's like saying people shouldn't go out and write songs and play music because the place is saturated with them. If you want to create, if you want to be productive, if you want to do something positive in your life, go for it. It doesn't matter whether it's flooded or whether there's 2,000 people out there doing the same thing. Who gives a flying fuck? Just go and do it. It doesn't matter. I've heard negativity about podcasts before. Oh, the market's flooded. I'm in the health and fitness industry. I've got a sports science degree. I've got personal training qualifications. I've leisure management. Blah, 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 blah. The market is flooded. Who cares? If you want to go and do that and you think you can make a life for yourself or you can do something that gives you flow and freedom and let you be creative, who cares if the market is flooded with it? I didn't get into this to make money. I didn't get into it to get any fame and notoriety. I just wanted to do this because it was something I was passionate about. I love listening to people's stories. I love to be educated. I love to find out things I didn't know. And that's what this podcast's all about. And you'll hear me say loads of times in the podcast, jeez, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. They're light bulb moments for me. And I absolutely love them. And if you can do that within your life, I would say to you, go for it. And that's the kind of attitude myself and Graham had in the podcast. Who gives a rat's? No one cares what you do. Just go out and do what you do and be happy. So I was absolutely delighted to have this interview and I can't wait to interview him again. And if anything else controversial pops up, I'm sure I'll be getting in contact on Twitter to get his opinion. He's a deadly, deadly lad. So look, have a listen to the interview and get in contact with us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram and let us know what you think. Enjoy the show. Take it easy. Bye bye. Today I'm joined by an absolute special guest. I think my celebrity status is going through the roof here. I have Graham Merrow Merrigan. Graham, what's the crack?
How are you, man? Thanks for having me.
I'm going up in the social echelons. I've got the podcast equivalent to probably, Joe Duffy.
Yeah, right. Joe Duffy.
We're talking fucking celebrity status. Graham is from the What's the Story podcast. So I've asked him to join me on the show. It's probably a bit of a keys in the bowl thing, isn't it? Like swapping partners. I have a few lads on my team I can give you if you want to swap over.
You get Danny up the next time.
Is he a handsome brute, is he?
Yeah, he is. He's a big lad.
Deadly, deadly. Now, I've asked Graham to come on the show because Graham himself has a podcast. He's also involved with the Ballybrack Bulls. He has funny opinions on things on Twitter. I love reading his Twitter feed. It's funny. You're a Rover supporter.
Yeah.
And he's from Ballybrack. It's around the corner.
I think I've recently, maybe in the last 10 or 15 months, I think I've become a bit fanatical about Rovers.
Oh yeah, I see a lot. My dad was a Pat supporter. Any rivalry between Pats and Rovers?
Sorry to hear that, yeah.
Yeah, commiserate. Yeah. See, boys, we used to buy him a season ticket every year. Now I'm not much of a Pat supporter. But he is, and he goes up diligently, the poor fucker.
Really? Up to Inchicore?
Up to the piggery, as they call it. I just say, were you up in the piggery last night? He's like, give over.
The last 10, 15 months, I'd be like counting down my days to Friday to get to a match.
Yeah?
Yeah. And then, as we're getting, the League of Ireland season is March to October, and then the Cup Finals, the first weekend of November. But the closer we get to the end of October, the closer I'm fretting. Because in the break then, it's unlike any other football league in Europe. The break is November, December, January, February. It's like the players have a four-month break.
Yeah, it's nuts.
And the fans have a four-month bloody break. And it's like, Jesus wept.
Yeah. Now, I'd be concerned, because my background is sports science, right?
Mm.
So I'd be thinking that's with Dan. There's a lot of time off for them players. I'd be looking at training age. When they come back again, how's the fitness levels? Would that be, I'm not saying because of the time of the year, but the time off, they're given a lot of time off, like to come back, unless they've been looking after their fitness.
Yeah,
their training age would be, because that used to happen with the Dublin team.
Right.
Now the Dublin team are super professional and,
yeah.
Or not the Dublin team, but GAA in general, they go off for a long time, then come back and they wouldn't be fit.
Now, yeah.
I've been talking to physiologists out of college about that. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I know from a few, my best mate actually used to play with Rovers. Pajo, and he would have had maybe November off, and then himself, he probably would have got back into the gym in December, and then the first week in January the players report back for pre-season training and stuff like that, and then it'll be the first, they'd be training for 2 months before the league would start again. So yeah, I'd say that they they take a week or two off to go away with their families and then do their own stuff and then back in as a group.
Yeah, I wouldn't say no. I think we avoid, like, I'd lose the quality of the sport, like Irish soccer. You know, it would be better and more professional and a better perspective if it was fitter.
Yeah.
Would you reckon that, what's your thoughts on the fitness level of Irish football?
Well, you can definitely see the top, say, four in the league would be Dundalk, Cork, Rovers, Waterford, and they would be full-time professional. So you can tell the difference between the top half of the league and the bottom half of the Absolutely. League that have lack of resources.
Yeah.
You know, the fitness. I was going to say there, you can see with Bowes with the lack of fitness, but they've beaten Rovers three times this season, so we'll move on from that.
It's interesting, myself and yourself were just talking before the podcast and talking about being organic and going off.
Yeah.
I hadn't even, no inclination I was going to talk to you about soccer and it's deadly, isn't it?
Yeah, that's how it goes. That's how a good podcast is kind of produced though, isn't it?
Deadly.
You veer off into all sorts of conversations.
That's probably I wanted to sit down with people. I said, I'd love to, I used to watch IFL TV, the boxing, Coogan Cassis. And he'd be interviewing these people. I mean, I'd love to sit down with these people, have the chats like John O'Carroll or any of these things. And that's kind of where the podcast, because I only went to interview people that are kind of sound or funny or educational. Yeah. And that it's a good
John O'Carroll's great, isn't he?
Oh, legend.
Yeah.
I've been hounding him on Twitter. Now, he's agreed to come on, but he can't because of the MTK ban.
The ban, yeah.
I tweeted Matthew Macklin, asked him to come to a point in Busk or Brooksells. I've seen him in there a few times.
Really?
But he hasn't come back. He's probably that fucking age.
Won't leave me alone.
No, I'd be stalking him. I'm hounding a few other people. But
I'm a Facebook friend of John O'Carroll's. Ever since he won that prize fighter on Sky.
Brilliant. I loved him since then. Same as me. Same as again. I tweeted him about that.
I asked him to come on our podcast as well, and he said any time. But I'd say that's changed now with the MTK thing.
Yeah, because he wrote, and I wrote, he just signed back with Matchroom. With Eddie Hearn. So I wrote him, sent him a private message, says, what's the crack, are we good to go now? He says, no, I'm still with MTK. I said, I thought you were at the jump and promotions.
So what's the story there? He's with Eddie Hearn.
He signed up with them for a couple of fights, but he's still MTK as management.
Right.
He didn't tell me that. He's still with them. I'm just assuming that's what they're for.
They look after the management side.
Yeah. I think, and I've said this to MTK, I wrote him as well, what's the story? Little fish like us having the brunt. The punishment from
the mainstream media.
Yeah, I just don't think it's fair. I think there should be a kind of a...
It's a bizarre situation, really, isn't it, with the professional boxing in Ireland now at the moment?
Yeah, and I think they are doing a great job. There's so much profile for Irish fighters and the sport.
Yeah.
But then the other troubles that the media are linking to it are just... But as I say, I'd love to get him on. He'd be deadly to get on.
Oh, he's a character. Absolute character.
Some banger, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely.
That fight with
he's brilliant.
Deco Savage.
Oh, it was a brilliant fight. Yeah, Declan Geraghty.
Yeah,
class fight. I seen that the day after. Now I didn't watch it live, and he's class. Like,
yeah,
and he's got a great charisma about him that I think boxing has lost a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. A lot of them are like robots. You know, I don't want to start slating anyone off now, but there's a few that are with Eddie Hearn, just robots. Just say the same thing, the same bullshit. Yeah. At least with Jono, there's a bit of crack.
Yeah, absolutely.
A bit of, you can connect with him.
Big time. The working class can connect with them.
Yeah, up the flats.
That's what it's about.
Up the flats. Come here, give us a little bit of your background. What are you doing at the moment? What has led you to doing podcasts? And what's...
What I'm doing at the moment, I work for Dell, Dell EMC. I'm a supervisor up there, quality supervisor. It kind of just pays the bills, to be honest. But the podcast, What's the Story, started over 3 years ago. Myself and Danny. Me and Danny go back years. I was in Danny's brother's class in school, and I'd know Danny Jason since we were teenagers. And we worked together. I actually got him an interview in a company, and we were working together. And we were getting a bit bored of the job up there. Two of us at the same time. Now he's still there, but he's since got promotions. But we were just getting a bit. What's the word? We were getting a bit bored, and we were having lunch one day, and we're kind of going, what's Danny actually was writing a blog about weight loss and his challenges of weight loss.
Right. Has he got a background in fitness, or was he just talking about his personal journey?
It was his personal journey, because
it's interesting. I talked to someone about that.
He was writing a blog just about his battles with food and his battle with trying to lose weight and stuff like that. And he was maybe four or five articles deep, and they were great articles. But he was just, it was just getting a bit monotonous for him, I think. The job as well was getting a bit monotonous for us.
Okay, so combination things.
Yeah, so he was saying, I was saying, Jesus, the articles are going great. Are you going to do them weekly, monthly or whatever? And he goes, I don't know. He says, I was thinking about a podcast. Would you do a podcast with me, like our own podcast? I said, absolutely. I did journalism in college, and Danny did as a master's in journalism as well.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I loved broadcasting when I was in college. I loved producing radio shows and stuff like
did
that.
You,
and,
yeah.
And I used to host a League of Ireland show with Dublin City FM for maybe 2 or 3 years with Declan Hughes called The Absolute Game. And it was just all League of Ireland. And then the odd time on a Sunday, I would do the Sunday sports show. That'd go from about 3 to 6 on Dublin City FM. So when he said that to me, I was like, Jesus, yeah, that'd be great.
This is our own gig.
Yeah, this would be our own gig. And we were kind of thinking, Lindsay was helping, my friend Lindsay Doyle, who's also a personal trainer. She was helping Danny with his weight loss at the time. And she was kind of helping him with the blogs as well, I think. And we were saying we'd get her involved because at the start it was kind of evolved in what it is today. But at the start it was kind of like documenting Danny's weight loss and how are you getting on. And then we were getting guests. We were shocked at the amount of people that were saying yeah to us. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was the same. You know, people are so sound at that time.
Yeah, so sound. We couldn't believe it. Like, so it kind of evolved in from Danny's weight loss journey to an actual show where we're interviewing people.
Savage.
And that happened quite quickly. And we did that, and we did it down in Lindsay's gym where she was working. And we'd interview the guests after hours. And then it just evolved. Lindsay left to have the baby. And it was me and Danny. And we start filming or recording up in Fitzpatrick's Castle Hotel. Which is great because they support us with a room every week in the business centre. And when you're getting would-be guests to come on and you tell them we're in a hotel and a nice enough hotel, like, it's a bit more better than going to a gym, you know what I mean? At 9 o'clock on a Wednesday or Thursday night.
Absolutely, it's a bit more.
Yeah, we're a bit...
More pull to it.
Oh, big time more pull to it. So it just evolved into that, the podcast, and we had our 100th episode last year. We celebrated with a live show for Suicide or Survive. We had it was like a TV game show. So we had former guests of Magic Mind, Steve Gunn, he was on the panel, Paul Howard.
Brilliant, lads.
Caroline McGuigan is the CEO of Suicide Survive, she was on the panel. UFC legend Aisling Daly was on the panel, Al Foran, the Impressionist, Colm Hayes. So we had like two teams and it was just, we just took the piss. Danny wrote it now, he wrote a show and it was on his screen and the audience there, we sold it out 200 tickets. Then we had an auction afterwards. When Danny presented the auction idea to me, I was like, this is going to be a bit difficult, like, because you're going to ask people to stay after the show on a Thursday night. But it proved to be a huge money earner, the auction, because we were getting Dublin jerseys signed, we got like Formula One merchandise signed, Ireland jerseys, Celtic sent us over a match day ticket to a match of anyone's choice for two people, you know, so people were lapping it up. And we raised about $3,000 and it was able to go to a Suicide or Survive workshop in Ballybrack, where we're from.
Brilliant.
So it catered for maybe 50 people to go along to a workshop on a Saturday from 9 to 5, and it would just give you the tools to help with your mental health.
Love it.
So it was brilliant. That was brilliant. That was last May, and then we were asked to do the Dublin Podcast Festival last September.
Oh, yeah.
So we did that. That was the first Dublin Podcast Festival. The second one's coming up now,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, it's in the Ivy Garden.
No, it's all over.
Yeah.
It's all over again. We did ours now. We had a panel of Dave McWilliams, Ken Early from Second Captains, and Joanne McNally.
Nice one.
And we just had a bit of crack. It was in the Workman's Club, and that was a great experience as well. So we haven't done a live show since because it is a lot of work. Like, it was very daunting.
It is.
On the lead up to it and nerves and stuff like that.
Yeah, I get signs myself now.
Yeah. And depending, like, when you're dealing with one guest for an interview, you get a bit nervous. But when you're dealing with six in the one night plus an audience, you're kind of going, what the fuck? But as soon as I was up on stage, I was loving life.
Yeah.
Like, the nerves were gone, and
everyone
was there for the crack, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was really good. So, we've been shocked with the amount of people that have said yes to us. Like, we've had George Foreman on the podcast.
Yeah. That's unreal.
You know, we've had, you know, Diamond Dallas Page. He's a professional wrestler who's taken the yoga world by storm. He has his own brand of yoga, DDP Yoga. We had him on. We've had PJ Gallagher twice. He was very generous with his time.
Deadly.
And his podcast goes through the roof. Vivian Rat's most recent podcast has gone, has exploded. We're still getting, 2-3 weeks later, we're still getting feedback.
I really liked it. I really liked it for so many. I love his communication style, his choice of words, his attitude, even in the...
His calmness.
His calmness. He was able to, yeah, deliver in a certain unique way. And I was thinking about it, although he was delivering poignant points and they were really heartbreaking to hear, there was an optimism, there was a sense of his resilience, and like even the one he talked about getting the ball in the face and playing on, you know, like I don't know, it was just remarkable. Like I'm kind of a visual thinker and I could just think of it there. Yeah, I just thought it was brilliant.
He's brilliant, isn't he? I've been a couple of coincidentally my job has like a little group called the True Ability Group. They have all these different groups. They have a women's network group, True Ability. True Ability would it tends to cater for staff with disabilities or parents of kids with disabilities, and we come together. And we did a thing maybe 2 years ago, and Vivian was the speaker, and that's when I first met Vivian properly. Maybe 3 years ago, I had heard of Vivian for years and just never met him, and that was the first time I met him. And It was just a joy to meet him, to be honest. And he was really impressive in a room full of Dell employees. Just, you know, he was actually chairing a meeting, but he had a talk at the start and it was brilliant.
Yeah.
He's deadly.
Did you just, when you're around these people, you know, I've got the option to interview loads of people, and you have this aura about them.
Mm.
Like when I first met Mark Barry, your coach, right? And I always sing his praise and I talk about him a lot. When I met him, his enthusiasm for being a sports inclusion officer is unreal, because he met me and was talking to me about brain injury, sports inclusion, blah, blah. And from his enthusiasm, I went, I actually don't have that enthusiasm.
Mm.
And that's what this project needed.
Right.
And I admired him as a coach, but I reflected and said, I actually don't have that. And that's what this needs.
Yeah.
Inclusion of sports and to do a job properly, you need that.
Absolutely.
And I was thinking, I might give this a go, I might give that a go, but my measuring stick was him.
And he breathes it morning, noon and night.
He breathes it, because he sat down, do this, do that. And I went, I'll only I don't do things half-hours, but I wasn't as invested in it as the way he spoke, and he's passionate. I think he's so a passionate. Savage coach.
The first time I met Mark was 2010, I think it was. I didn't do any wheelchair disability sports at all. I was brought up in Ballybrack. My mother and father had me quite young. They were teenagers, and I lived primarily with my mother's parents, and my mother and my dad was always there as well. But I always remember my granny and my mum. I had a physiotherapist, Brenda Green, at the time, out in Sandymount in Able, Ireland. And they were always saying, anytime I'd visit Brenda, and she'd be stretching me bones and doing everything, and then we'd be leaving, and I'd always see her having a word with either my granny or my mother, whoever was with me at the time. It was always my mum or my granny. And I just remember hating the conversation after it, because they were always trying to get me to do disability sports at age 7 or 8 or 9. And I was never brought up with people with disabilities. I've only been kind of in that environment since 2011. Brenda Green always wanted to get me to do wheelchair racing as an 8-year-old teenager. And I just never did it. Like,
but you were always mainstream school and all.
Yeah, mainstream school. And I didn't know anyone in a wheelchair. I was actually... The environment I was brought up on was that I didn't have a disability.
Okay, that's a great thing.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Whether it be particularly my family, like my dad, Jesus Christ, like my dad, if my mates were like robbing orchards, climbing up trees to rob apples, my dad would be like, why aren't you doing that? And I'm like, I can't climb a fucking tree. Like, then I got up on a wall, I climbed the tree and I fell down the tree, you know. But I still, you know, there was still that not being oblivious or anything to it, but just like, of course you can do it. And my dad was like 17, 18 having me, do you know what I mean?
Fuck.
But yeah, I was always afraid of wheelchair users at that age. I don't know why. I really don't know why. As you said there, I went to mainstream school. When I got involved in disability sports, I was very, very thankful. it happened by coincidence. I was at an Ireland match in Lansdowne Road, Ireland and Russia, I believe it was, in 2010, and I met Mark in the lift for the first time. And Mark asked me, Mark said, "Do you do disability sports?" And I says, "No." And he goes, "Do you do any wheelchair sports?" I said, "No." He says, "You're a big lad. Like, you'd have a lot of strength." Or,
"Yeah, you're in great nick.
You should. You
I was
thinking
about the T-shirt, but I was playing the accountant. You're in good nick."
He said, You should think about it. And he gave me his business card. And I think that was like October of 2010. And I was in a long-term relationship at the time. We were going about 5 or 6 years. And that ended then maybe 6 months later. And I was kind of going one day. I was in my room. I was like, right, I need to get over this. And I need to keep myself busy. And then I looked at my windowsill. And Mark's business card was still there. So I rang Mark. And I said, "Mark, how's it going? I met you 6 months ago." He goes, "Oh, yeah, I remember, yes." And I says, "Oh, yeah, I'm interested in what you have to offer," or whatever. Had a meeting with him, gave me a form, ticked off loads of sports, as you do when you're introduced to sport at no matter age, there's so many sports to choose from. So I tried them all, and then I joined Colester and played wheelchair basketball because I love football. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you see that on Twitter.
Yeah, I love football, so I love the team sport. I tried a lot of individual sports, and mentally I just wasn't right. I couldn't cut it. Like,
right.
I did track racing and I did hand cycling for a while, and
you like the camaraderie and the banter.
Absolutely, the team session, like 2 hours with 10 teammates, you know, whether you're rowing or getting on, or it's the crack. Like, so that's how I got into wheelchair sports. I went to Colester, was with them for 4 years. Towards the end of my time in Colester, I wasn't really getting my game. There was a lot of players in the team, and I was actually giving out to Mark in a sense. I was kind of going, and it was gas because the head coach at Colester at the time is someone I really look up to, John Fulham, who's an absolute legend as well. He was trying to play me all the time, but there was loads on the squad, and I'm only on the scene maybe 4 years. And yeah. I said to Mark, there's no point in me travelling all over the country if I'm only getting 4 or 5 minutes. I says, I'm thinking about packing it in. And I says, I'd love if we had a basketball team on the south side, because a lot of Southsiders were playing for Colester, and I was looking at them, and I was saying to Mark, there's 4 or 5 lads here that like we could create our own team. And Mark was like, I was just thinking the exact same, because Mark's in Southside as well. So we started a pilot halfway short in that last season I was with Colester, and we invited invite only from November to May, and there was a good uptake. The next season we started the Ballyrock Bulls.
Deadly.
Yeah.
How was that received then by Colester? Was there a bit of a fallout from that?
There was no.
No, I'm not trying to stoke the fires.
No. There's definitely a rivalry there.
Oh, because of it?
I would imagine.
Just because they're just another team.
I don't know for the first 2 or 3 years, Colester were calling us Colester B. You know, so there was that. Yeah, so there was a bit of that. Do you know what I mean? But we beat them in the National Cup final in January.
How would you like them apples?
Yeah, up in Talla Basketball Arena, which was unbelievable to say the least. So yeah, there's definitely a bit of rivalry there between the two teams. Yeah, you need rivalry in sport.
Though. Absolutely. Yeah. It's not a bad thing. Yeah. You need a competitive edge.
A lot of my family, when I started wheelchair basketball, they couldn't believe the competitiveness to it. And I don't know whether they looked on it patronisingly and kind of said, well, it's disability sports. But when they came to watch the matches, they were like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah.
Because they're smashing each other up. And it's a bit annoying that people, and look, they were my own family as well. It was a bit annoying that they would think that, you know, that there wasn't competitive edge to it. But there is in all games.
People make assumptions about everything. But they don't know. They just paint it whatever brush they think it is. Like, you know, it's just a bunch of blokes in wheelchairs rolling around. I mean, I get into a wheelchair down the sports hall. I don't like basketball. Wouldn't be into watching. But playing it is unbelievable.
Yeah.
The crack.
Absolutely.
Deadly. Like, it's deadly.
Yeah.
And it's really hard.
Brilliant. Anytime
like
someone finds...
play it and it's savage.
Yeah, anytime someone asks me, when someone finds out I play wheelchair basketball, they always say, and are the nets the same? And is the court the same? And you're kind of going, are you for real? Like,
oh, fuck off.
Are you for real? Well, in what world is that question? Like... Are you for real?
Yeah, like I don't even know where to answer.
No, I just, of course it's the bloody... I kind of just say, don't be stupid. Of course it's the... not going to change the nets. Like,
just pull them down a little bit, make the balls bigger.
And look, I assume that they've seen a bit of Paralympic sports on the TV or whatever, and then just watch it and see that it is the normal size and the normal nets and stuff.
Have you seen that film, then, Mortar Ball?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
That's deadly.
Yeah, it's good, yeah. It's very good. I've seen it years ago. But yeah, they had to change the name of it because it's now wheelchair rugby.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. But they couldn't market Mortar Ball for a Paralympic sport or whatever, so they had to change the name. I played a different variation of rugby, wheelchair. It was wheelchair rugby sevens, and it's basically rugby union in a wheelchair. And a guy from France came up with the idea. He went all around to the Six Nations and introduced it, and we went to the first inaugural Six Nations, and we won the Triple Crown in France. It was great.
Deadly.
Yeah, the sport never really took off. I believe they still train from time to time. And they might have had a match last year, actually, once off matches, but it has great potential, and it's easier. I think, my personal opinion, it's easier on the eye, and it's easier to, it's because it's essentially rugby union on wheels, but there is more scope for injuries, which is why it's probably not taking off.
And break is up. Something you talked about on the, in the interview with Vivian, you asked him, does he have rights? Do you have rights? And I picked up that you didn't answer. You didn't say, do you, as a wheelchair user, do you think you have rights?
It depends on what day you get me with this question, to be honest.
I just know you didn't give your input on it, and I really wanted to know that.
Technically speaking, I don't have any rights. Because if you... now, I'll give you an example, okay? I was, you know, the ticket, the supplement from the Irish Times? I opened that one day, maybe 2 years ago. And a big fan of Christy Brown's books and his, and My Left Foot's one of my favourite films ever, and his art and stuff like that. And I seen in the ticket that there was an exhibition for Christy Brown on. And I was like, jeez, I'm going to go to that. And I seen that it was in the Little Museum of Ireland. Oh, I said to myself, no, it's Christy Brown. He's an advocate for wheelchair activism or whatever. So there's no need to plan ahead, I said to myself. But something in my head said, feck it, I'll give them a buzz. So I rang them the day before and I said, look, I'm just ringing up. I know the answer is probably yes anyway, but for the Christy Brown exhibition, you're wheelchair accessible, are you? And they're like, oh, I'm afraid we're not. It's like, I says, pardon? How are you not, like? You're facilitating a Christy Brown exhibition, but you're not accessible. Did you know Christy Brown was in a wheelchair, yeah? They're like, oh, no, we're trying with the government, and it's a public listed building and we can't upgrade it and stuff like that. I was like, you're joking me. So there's an example of where I've no rights to go to that public exhibition.
That's a great point.
Whereas you do.
Okay, absolutely.
So how do I have rights?
Yeah.
When it's something as simple as that.
Valid point.
If I'm out and I'm going to the pub, not all pubs have wheelchair toilets. So I've no right. I can't go to a toilet. So sometimes I'd have to pace myself or just ask, can we go to the next bar? That can be very embarrassing as well on dates and stuff like that.
That's, you know, another question. I did listen to that interview as well, and you said you were on a couple of dates, so that must be a difficult one as well.
It can be. It depends now. It can be, because most recently the girl that I would say I was dating would say, you know, where do you want to go?
Yeah.
She's asking that because, you know, I don't know anywhere per se where it was wheelchair accessible or toilets and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? So there's their basic rights.
They're the rights.
Do you know what I mean? And this, the UN treaty that they say was ratified, it wasn't as bollocks ratified. It was ratified, but I'm not allowed to complain about such an issue like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've had incidents where nightclubs have called me a hazard, and I'm because I'm in the way of patrons, and would I go back upstairs to the other bar?
Like, no. Joking.
Yeah, I was like, no, I'm not moving.
The boat.
So they wouldn't say that to you, do you know what I mean? No. They'd say it to me. And with the UN ratification thing, Finney McGrath said it's ratified. It's not ratified, because there's no point in having it if I can't complain. The reason why it's there and it's in place is because we should be able to complain about areas we can't access.
Okay.
I shouldn't have to plan a bleeding. It's 2018. I shouldn't have to plan a Saturday night if I'm going into town.
Absolutely. I thought I was in the know. I work in a hospital that's full of disabilities. You know, I know all about it. I think I'm in a bubble. I didn't realise. I've only learned through interviews that I've done with people with brain injuries and my own crowd. We talk that the world is full of equality and diversity. I don't think it has come on a lot.
No, it hasn't.
I don't. And I talk to, like, you know, different people and different ethnic minorities and all that. We're still in the dungeon sometimes, especially people in wheelchairs. Yeah,
big time. Big time. It's not... I'm not hopeful for it to improve.
Like we haven't evolved much. We say words and we use vocab like this. We articulate and we say all these bullshit, but the actions are not the same.
No. How have we evolved when 10 years ago I could go down to a dart station and get on a dart and go to town? Whereas in 2018 you have to ring 48 hours in advance.
I couldn't believe that when I heard that.
Like, how was that progression like?
I was like, nah, that's a joke. No. Seriously.
24 hours or 48 hours max. Depends on what train station you're at. Like, you know, how's that come on? Like, it hasn't come on. It's gone backwards. It's gone absolutely fucking backwards. I mean, I was talking to... Exactly. It's not being able to go to the toilet when you're out on a day is not humane. That's embarrassing. I was in a pub recently and it's fully accessible. And the owner was telling me that he's trying to renovate the upstairs.
The Duke?
Yeah. With a lift. Pub. Brilliant pub. And he's trying to renovate upstairs, renovate downstairs. He's getting a lift in and stuff like that. So the architect put the plans in. And the council rejected it because it's a listed building. And where the lift is being proposed, it's damaging the listed part. Now, how the fuck in 2018 are we caring? Important? Who's more important?
I was thinking, who gives a fuck about, like, the listed building?
You're bringing modern gadgets upstairs. You're bringing laptops. You're bringing mobile phones that have evolved over the years. All technology tools. But I can't go up fucking stairs to use those technology tools.
I know. And, like, who gets hurt in all this? The human, your feelings, you know what I mean? I can't get my head around that.
How are they allowed?
The historians would look back and go, ah, no, do you know what? It's all right, just put the lift in.
I understand how, you know, how the outside of a building should look, or if they want to preserve it. Do you know what I mean? I understand that element of it. But the inside shouldn't give a shite. Like I understand the protected listed and stuff like that.
Of course.
I understand that you'd want to maintain a certain look, a vintage look, a Georgian look from whenever. But, I mean, it just doesn't cater for disabilities at all. Mm. None at all, like... Because the amount of times, if you go around Merrion Square and see all those kind of Georgian houses, a lot of them are businesses. There's a fair few that have lifts. And then when you get to the lift, you have to ring someone from the inside to come outside. It's like, where's my independence here? Like, yeah. I don't have independence at times.
Yeah.
Now, I drive, which is great. And look, for the most part, I've an absolutely great life.
Yeah.
But there are those little things.
But not everybody's in your position.
Absolutely. Like, I'd like to... I'd be the type that would want to fight for someone else. Do you know what I mean? You know, me and Vivi were talking about advocacy or activism. He'd be the advocate. I'd probably be the activist. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Where...
You just want to get shit done.
I just want to get shit done. Don't delay it with bureaucracy and paperwork and... Yeah.
I like to do things and apologise later.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry about that. I didn't know.
We're getting the job done, like.
Yeah, I get it. I do that all the time in the job that I work.
The anger I'd get now if I see on Twitter, because over the last year or so, through Vivian's account, I've followed people with disabilities. And, I mean, the shy people have to come up with, like, if they're not driving and they commute to town by themselves independently, like, the shite that you put up with.
Absolutely. I work with people with disabilities and you talked about dating.
Mm.
Is that difficult, dating, as to do, being a wheelchair user?
It's, to me, it's no difficult than an able-bodied person, to be honest. It's still the same issues of trying to find the right person.
You know, because I interviewed a lady called Sasha Decker and she had a brain injury.
Right.
And she just found it really difficult. It was just hard, and you know. So I was wondering, is that she had a brain injury late in her life? You've had your disability
all my life. Yeah,
all your life. Is there a different kind of mindset?
I don't know, like, to be honest, like, I've never had a problem with it. I know of, there was a play last year in the Fringe, the Dublin Fringe Festival, Louise Bruton wrote it, a wheelchair user, called Why Won't You Have Sex With Me? And that was, it was a kind of satirical look at some of the stuff she has to face in the difficulty of dating or trying to find someone or whatever, and the stuff that she has to listen to, or I've always been told, I was told of my friend Siobhan, who's living in Australia, that I charmed the knickers off a nun, so I've never had really issues.
You're a couple of kids in the convent, haven't
you? I've never had, I have, like, all my mates and all are, would be, most of my mates would be married off and stuff like that. I'm not living to find somebody. Do you know, I'm single at the moment. There's a crush out there. She's not budging, but I'll get her. I'm only joking.
You'll hunt her down like a wounded animal.
But I'm not living to find my soulmate, so to speak. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? If I find...
You'll wait till the universe gives it to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I was dating a girl over the last month or so, and it's gone great, but it might happen later in life or down the road or whatever.
Deadly.
Well, I've never had any...
I think it's down to, and the reason I asked you, I only asked that because you're a person with disability, she's a person with disability, and I know you both coming from a different hemisphere, and I just think it's down to attitude.
It is down to attitude, yeah.
You know, and your perception is reality, you know.
But you don't want to, like, the public has this poor me attitude on people with disabilities and wheelchair users. You don't want to give that fruition, do you know what I mean? You don't want to exaggerate that. I don't have a poor me attitude, but at the same time, like, it'd be impossible for two wheelchair users to date each other in this country because the infrastructure isn't there. Only one wheelchair user is allowed on a bus at a time, like, do you know what I mean?
Fuck.
So if you're going on a date,
they're messing.
Yeah
I never knew that.
Only one wheelchair user on a bus.
That's
at a time.
Education on me.
Yeah, so it'd be impossible for that to happen. But if you have a kind of poor me, it is down to probably my attitude, because if you have a poor me attitude or kind of self, kind of just sad about it or stuff like that, people see that and then you're giving them tools to kind of say, ah, poor him, and you don't want that.
You,
like,
create the atmosphere.
You create the atmosphere. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Like, if you show off a poor me attitude. It's easier for me to say when I've known no different all my life, and I've had the best of family and friends around me, that have never treated me any differently. Do you know what I mean? So it's probably easier in my circumstances.
But what I'm hoping for these people to pick up then, or anyone to pick up, is it's your attitude. Do you know what I mean? You were saying it's easy for you. It's not. You just have that attitude. Mm. Whether you bought it in Dales or not, it doesn't really matter. You have it.
Mm.
And they should say, look, this works for this dude. I think I should try a bit of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Like, you know what I mean? It can be infectious. Like,
but sometimes, like, I lived in Australia for a year, and for ages after that, when I came home, sometimes you'd hear people like, you lived in Australia? Go away. And I'm kind of going, yeah, why wouldn't I, like?
Yeah, I don't find any difference.
There's wheelchair users in Australia, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's okay.
People are mad. Like, there's, you go into town as well sometimes, and you get to, like, one of my mates loves the Temple Barber.
Right.
So we'd go there, and I remember one time a tourist came up to me from England, a woman. She goes, she said that I was very handsome, do you know what I mean? And we were flirting, so to speak. And then she goes, so how long are you in the chair? And I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. I says, what? And she goes, how long are you in the chair? And I says, since fucking 8 o'clock this morning, you nosy bitch. What do you need to know that for, like? Do you know what I mean? What do you need to know that for?
That's a great. You must have a few answers in your back pocket that you pull out all the time for all them stupid questions.
Yeah, but sometimes it depends on what mood I'm in. Sometimes I could be in a mood where I'm trying to educate someone, and then sometimes I could be in the mood where, fuck you, I haven't got the time.
Yeah,
like,
not today, Charlie.
Like, sometimes you'd be in a nightclub and the Joe Soap would come up and start saying, fair play to you for coming out. Do you know what I mean? It's like, what? What do you mean fair play to you? Like, you wouldn't say that to me mate there. Do you know, so
that's fucking rough, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's horrible. Humans can be horrible.
Ah, yeah, they don't know it either. Like, they could be just drunk, and the next day they probably have the fear, oh my god, I said that to that wheelchair user.
Yeah.
That's what I would hope anyway.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
But I wouldn't I, 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 I wouldn't advocate the kind of poor me attitude anyway.
There's no point. Like, no matter what kind of position you're in life, it's about your attitude.
Yeah.
And whether you're suicidal, whether you're mental health, whether you're disabilities, whatever, it's your attitude that will get you through it.
Absolutely. If I had, and thank God I haven't, but if I ever had any mental health issues, it won't be because I'm in a chair. Do you know what I mean? I've never once in my life, not even a second, have I ever felt down because I'm in a chair, or I'm less fortunate because I can't get up a few steps, or do you know what I mean? Like, there's times I've been refused into pubs in town because it's been too packed. My attitude, go mad or just go to the next one. There's loads of choices in town. Do you know what I mean? But sometimes I go mad.
Is that the Ballybrack in you?
Yeah, probably.
Up the Ballybrack.
Yeah, that's it.
Just before I go on, I'm going to stay with disabilities and I have a question to ask you.
Yeah.
The reason you go to the Duke, you don't know Colm Lynch, do you, by any chance?
Colm Lynch.
He plays in the Duke and he's from around Ballybrack.
I know of Colm. I don't know him personally. Yeah. The singer, is it?
Yeah.
No, I've heard his stuff. He played in the Graduate a few times, I think.
That's right. Yeah. He's always played up in the Graduate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it might have been a link there.
No, Mark Barry first got me going to the Duke because I think he knows the manager, the owner.
Okay, cool.
And it's got a wheelchair toilet and all. That's how I ended up going there.
Deadly.
Yeah. I'm not a big drinker now, to be honest. Summer, I like a few drinks. And
a few
then,
fizzy drinks.
Yeah, then the Christmas period, I like a few drinks. Sometimes, though, from Christmas, the next time I drink after that would be Paddy's Day.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Our national celebration.
I just can't handle the hangovers anymore.
No, I'm brutal. I went out Saturday night with a few fizzy drinks for the first time in weeks. I was in an absolute hoop on Sunday morning, all day.
I went out 2 weeks ago, and that was the last time I went out, 2 Saturdays ago. Went to see Christy Moore, and I was dying until Wednesday. In the horrors.
Oh, it's brutal, isn't it?
It's brutal. I can't hack it anymore.
Right, here's one for you.
Yeah.
The Mark Pollock TED Talk.
Yeah.
You've watched it. You've posted stuff on Twitter about it. I've watched it.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts? I know you're not particularly happy about some of the things he said.
Yeah, I just
give us your insights about that.
So the Mark Pollock situation, his TED Talk, it actually ruined me weekend watching that, to be honest. I watched that Saturday morning.
No, you've seen that 2014. That's the second version of it.
That's the second version. I won't watch the first version if the second version annoyed me so much.
Right.
I just think it gave off the wrong message. We spoke there about the poor me attitude. I don't think that did anything for us in terms of people saying poor me. I think it actually helped it, and it gave people more credence to say poor them or poor me. He's on his own journey, Mark, which is fine. He's looking for a cure, which again I don't have any problems with. But he has come from a privileged situation where he has his trust, his millions and millions of dollars, euro, kind of being raised for this trust to find the cure for his condition. And I just don't, let's say Danny from a working class area acquires an injury. Should Mark Pollock find the cure? And Danny from the working class area acquires this injury. Danny's not going to be able to afford that cure. So I just felt that the TED Talk was a bit misleading. I didn't like the way they quoted Christopher Reeve's Dreamt of a World with Empty Wheelchairs. I just think that's a disgusting quote. Like me, Mark, and many other people who decided to retweet me from a disability background. We're all proud of being in a wheelchair. Do you know what I mean? I've never dreamt of a day where I wanted to walk. I'd say there are people in disability sports that probably have, and that's fine. That's absolutely fine. But I just don't think the message just went out. How do I say it? Like, because it really bothered me because there were so many people from the cultural elite in Ireland that retweeted it and shared it and said how inspiring it was, and it's an inspiring love story with the two of them and stuff like that, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But these people that are retweeting it, they're not disabled. They don't use a wheelchair. I mean, I use my wheelchair as an enabler to have a very successful life, and I'm doing that. I just get the impression, and I got the impression from that, that he hates being in a wheelchair. You know, instead he's trying to find the cure that could be, like, it's his choice to find that cure and all, and course, that's fine. And it's a, but you can't be quoting 30 million people with disabilities, you know, and if we get this cure, we can help them. But don't include me in that number. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I just thought it was, I just don't like that whole message.
Well, what I took from Roy, and I kind of,
I accept the science part of it though.
Yeah.
Now, I just don't think it's going to be affordable for everybody.
I looked and I watched, and because I'm crazy into science, I loved it. I loved the concept of that. I was watching and my eyes were on that, and the story was lovely. His journey was brilliant. And then I felt guilty because, yeah, for the people that can't afford it, I found it very elitist. I found it like, that's not, straight away my insecurity as a working class person came up. How would Barry next door to me, how would Mary upstairs afford this kind of stuff? Mm. This would be like, this is what you could have won.
Absolutely.
You know, and they'd be like, oh, that's only for the elites of society. You know, but then again, I was thinking, he's trying to, you know, push the boundaries, but I just felt it was really about him. I didn't get it was about...
I just thought, I was very disappointed watching it, and I felt if you're going to be given a platform like a TED Talk, a second TED Talk, there was no message of equality there. It was the opposite. It was the contrary.
I didn't get that. Yeah. I just thought it was a one man. It was about him and his. It was.
Yeah.
He wasn't speaking as, when I talk about the Anna H, I talk in a collective. I talk about we are a community.
Mm.
I didn't get a sense of community from him though.
I didn't get that at all. Not even a bit. That's what I am. I'm about community. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Look, I'm a leader here, and I think it's us and we. I just found a bit of void. Now that's probably just my perception.
And look, that's only my perception as well. You know, I've never met Mark. I've seen all the stuff he's done. But I mean, it's not. I was thinking about, during the whole process of watching that, I was thinking about some of the junior players we have on the Bulls team that have acquired their injury. And I couldn't help but think, I didn't want to alert them to the TED Talk. I actually wanted to protect them and not let them watch it, because they're from working class areas and they're not going to be able to afford this.
Like a false hope.
It's completely false hope.
Yeah.
Like, it's false hope in a sense of it ever becoming affordable, considering the millions and millions and millions he's putting into it.
It's like when people come onto a program, brain injury, and then somebody from a well-to-do family comes on, and then they start talking about stem cells and all this kind of stuff,
yeah,
and going off to certain countries to get these kind of procedures done. And there's not a lot of research done behind it, but they'll take your money and you can pump it.
Yeah.
And then you've got other people on the program are on the medical card, and their family are still trying to get the scratcher.
Exactly. That's what I was watching.
It's similar to that.
I was like, I have to fight for things.
Oh, like,
yeah. Every 2 years you have to fight for your medical card. And this, like, should Mark find the cure, how much is the process going to cost?
Mm.
How much is the treatment going to cost? It's not going to be free.
And somebody said something to me the other day, and I won't say his name, he works in the hospital. He was saying he gets in the machine and he walks, but keeps him upright, but he then, when the machine's off, it goes back. So it looks more like it's for aesthetics,
yeah,
rather than a function. It's not like it's going to bring him around the place.
No, I agree.
And now Mark Pollock would probably say that will be down the road. That's the plan.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I didn't.
I agree with that comment as well. Because
a few therapists are not too happy with it. You know, physios, I'm not saying where they're from or that now, I'm not in trouble, but they weren't too agreeing with the talk.
But I just think,
didn't paint a good life for people with disabilities.
I know a lot of people in the disability sports world that have acquired their injury, and they all own their injury. They all own their disability. You know, they've gone on, they've had wife and kids. And now, he did have a disclaimer at the end of the TED Talk, and he said that this happens, of course. But I was even unsettled that he had a disclaimer at the end of it.
Hmm.
Why did you feel the need to have a disclaimer? You shouldn't have the need. Your message, you're giving a TED Talk. I don't really like the TED Talks anyway. I think they're a bit pompous and they're a bit elitist and stuff like that. There was one ages ago, Sinead Bourke, who has dwarfism. She's a great advocate for dwarfism.
I've watched so many talks.
It was really, really good. And that's the only one I've really watched. Otherwise, I find them very pompous and cheesy and elitist. But the whole message was, it was elitist, I thought. And I just, the cultural elitist as well from Ireland's social circles, who I would look up to from a social point of view, all retweeting it and all. That's why I tweeted Colm O'Gorman and I says, is that you as a director of Amnesty International, do you find the words Christopher Reeve dreamt of a world with empty wheelchairs, do you find that equality? Like, you know, Colm O'Gorman, who's campaigned for marriage equality, who's campaigned for abortion, like, he tweeted me back saying, I wouldn't be able to answer being a non-wheelchair user. But hold on a minute, mate, you're after sharing it. You're after sharing the story, the love story part element of it. But there's a knock-on effect there. And obviously, I'm very angry about it. Like, do you know what I mean? And I tweeted somebody who I know very well, who has about 20,000, 30,000, or sorry, I text somebody who has 20,000 or 30,000 followers. And I WhatsApped them on the Sunday morning afterwards. And I just said to him, look, this is how I feel about it. I just want to mention, I need to get it off my chest. Because this guy who I text, he's a great mind and he loves both sides. And and he removed the tweet because I text him. He said, I had no idea this caused much sadness or... I just felt it was awful, to be honest.
Yeah,
I'm not stopping him as if I can. I'm not saying he shouldn't be finding a cure. If he can do with his life what he wants. But if you've been given a TED Talk platform, try and come across a bit more equality. Try and think about people like me and other people that own their disability, use their wheelchair as an enabler to get from A to B. I think he just needs to own his wheelchair and say, right, this appreciate his wheelchair a bit more.
Do you know when he decided to do this or whatever, this project, what would you reckon is the why for it? What would you reckon he's hoping to get from doing it?
Mark?
Yeah, what was the purpose of it? Was it a fundraiser? Is it education? Was it promotion?
I think he wants to walk again.
But to get them doing that TED Talk again, was it to raise the profile of the...
I don't know. He was at... Mark is in a very privileged situation because he gets invited to all these talks. He was in Davos with the world leaders and he met the guy that owns the TED Talk franchise. Mm. And Mark gave a talk at Davos where all the world leaders were meet, and your man was very impressed and invited him to do another TED Talk in Canada. That's why he did the most recent one. Okay. They decided to kind of go down the route of the love story. He acquired a disability. He told his wife, you know, I have this disability now, so, you know, you don't need to stay with me. What type of message is that, like?
Yeah.
What type of message is that for an 18-year-old who's just acquired a disability?
And the whole link to superhero and...
It's flawed.
Like
even referencing Christopher Reeve, like, do you know what I mean?
It doesn't send it. I'd love to talk to him. I'd love to talk to Mark.
He tweeted me back actually, and I didn't bother me whole tweeting him. But
did you not?
No, because he started bringing up choice, and I'm like, and Colm O'Gorman's in the tweet, and to me, when you bring up choice in that kind of environment, it's like, no, this isn't about. I felt he used the word choice in that situation, like the marriage equality referendum or abortion referendum, and I'm like, no, this isn't about choice. You know, we're miles away from any cure or any treatment for people to be able to walk without machines and stuff like that. We're miles away from it. Yeah. Now, this might be very negative tone of this podcast.
No, it's just not just your opinion.
Yeah.
Whether, like, I don't care if it's negative or positive. It's your opinion that's important.
Yeah, it's just my opinion. Yeah. I was going to write back something to him saying, you know, you're veering off the debate.
Sometimes people can create circular arguments.
Yeah, that was a circular argument, big time.
Moving away from point, stick to point. Just about equality, I just don't think we're a state of equality. I remember the marriage referendum and people were like, oh, will you vote this, vote that?
Mm.
I'm like, there's no equality in Ireland, there's no equality in class, there's no equality in unmarried fathers. I'm an unmarried father, I'm not treated with equality. There's no equality in the workplace for women, for men. And now there's this hoo-ha about the marriage. I don't give a rat's about marriage. I don't give a rat's about the church.
Yeah.
We live in a world of no equality. What do you think?
None. I agree. We've none.
It's horseshit. They roll out these things and they want you all to hoo-ha behind it. But let's get to the bones of the country. We're not very... Like, it's an elitist ran.
It is. It's elitist. And as long as Fine Gael are in power, it's going to be elitist. I read the other day that since Fine Gael have been in power, it's gone from 19,000 millionaires to something like 90,000 millionaires. In 6 or 7 years. So you're right, it is an elitist environment we're living in currently. And I don't think, I would say, I know I always get stick from my mates, I think they're just trying to wind me up anyway, but I would say that there is an alternative option on the left. I'm a socialist. I would say that Mary Lou would be a great leader. And I'm only saying that because I'd say I would rather give her a chance. And if it goes tits up, well then it goes tits up. But Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have ran this country into the ground for so long. Yeah. But in terms of the equality, no, there is no equality.
And no, I don't have a background in politics. I don't know anything about politics. I'm the Joey Essex of politics. I haven't a Scooby-Doo. I'm just talking about what I see functionally, what I see around me.
Yeah,
I'm in a hospital that promotes quality and we do an amazing job on the ground level. People are brilliant at their job. I'm talking about the side and what I see around.
No.
We talk about, I've done a leadership course and all this equality. I feel like I've all these tools, but
no, there's
I'm
no
always been fighting to see. I'm like on Bray Beast trying to get the sea back in.
Yeah.
You know, flicking the water back in. Yeah. And going, hold on.
But the funny thing is, you mentioned the marriage referendum and you mentioned the most recent referendum and they were talking about equality. And although the abortion thing was a bit more sensitive, but the marriage equality, when they were talking about, you know, I was always voting yes. In both.
Yeah, because I know people that need it. My daughter is a lesbian, you know.
Yeah.
No problem.
The two referendums, I didn't need the campaign to tell me what to vote. I was voting yes, but particularly in the marriage referendum, I was a bit envious of that, because what I was envious about was that the UN convention to ratify people with disabilities, that convention that we needed ratifying, it was 10 years on the table, government table, and no one has ratified it. So I was envious in the sense that the whole country got behind the gay community, and rightfully so, in my opinion. But it was kind of like, you're pontificating equality. I'm voting yes for you.
Yeah.
But like, help me out here.
Yeah. That's my same thing. Yeah. I'm saying I'm a father, a single father. No, I'm not saying, oh, let's all the fathers get together. But there's loads of this in society.
Yeah.
Like people in wheelchairs, disabilities, having to fight for a medical card.
Oh, stop.
Are you winding me up?
But you'd see Panty Bliss and she pontificate about equality. And it's like, Panty, come on. I don't have equality. Help me out here. You've got a huge followership.
Let's row together.
Yeah, let's join together. Exactly. Let's campaign.
The travelling community, whatever. I don't give a fuck. Let's all work together.
Yeah. Because you'd see when there was a disability march in town now. I mean, it was at 2 o'clock in the day one time and not many people showed up. But if you look at the marriage referendum marches, they were unreal. Like, help us out. We're all one. Help each other out.
Mothers, ethnic minorities. Mm. The list goes on. The list goes on.
We're far from equality.
People with ginger hair. I know mine is going, but I'm still an ethnic minority. You know what I mean? I'm like, we've got no
way. I don't know what we do in relation to that, because I know people in disability circles who have contacted, who were inspired by the marriage referendum campaigns and the grassroots level of the abortion referendum. They were all inspired by that. And I know people that have contacted people in that circle to no avail, not even a response. You know, help us out. Because if you, last year, right, People Before Profit invited me to speak at, it was basically a call to action for the ratification to be ratified and to a mass demonstration. This time last year, I think it was. And the stories there were just disgraceful. And I was kind of thinking, and I'm picking on Panty Bliss because she has a huge following and she did a stellar job in the marriage referendum. But if people like Panty Bliss or Colin McGorman and stuff like that were in that room that night, and if they weren't inspired to help out or to make a change, I don't know what to think. Because a mother had to leg it. She wanted to be there in the meeting. Myself and Tom Clonan spoke, and Richard Boy Barrett. And she said, I have to go now because I only have 1 hour care assistance. It used to be 24 hours. Now I've only an hour.
That breaks your heart.
So where's the equality
there?
That
breaks my heart. I sat with Eileen Flynn. She's an activist for the travelling community. And just to hear her from a human level, like the struggles growing up, if that doesn't touch you now, I've told the story to people that I train with, people in, I'm like telling you, like, yeah, but the travelling community, straight away, I'm like, this is a human being.
Mm.
Like, from the time she was born, is the bottom of the ladder in society as a human being. They're not even regarded, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I couldn't get I couldn't get my mind around. And she invited me into the whole or site up there in Lambton Park, and it blew my mind.
But people as well, like, it's gas. You mentioned the traveling community there, because people, you know, when you talk about the Troubles and why did republicanism kind of revolt in Derry in the 60s and 70s, they revolted because what was happening to their people. You know, there was a reason why they revolted and started a campaign, whether you agree with it or not. There is a reason there.
Okay.
And you look at the travelling community and you wonder why. Oh, yeah, I hear people always say, like, oh, I bet you it was the Travellers. You know, someone robbed the house down the road, I bet you it was the Travellers. Someone robbed the car, I bet you it was Travellers. Like, I'm not justifying their actions, but they've been put to a side for hundreds of years in this country. You know, Charles Haughey wanted the final solution with the travelling community. Do you know what I mean? In the 70s. The final solution.
What, that was like, either we just wiped them all out or something?
Segregation, like. Wow. So if you're going to segregate a society, they're going to act.
Of course.
There's going to be disobedience there.
Of course.
You know, I'm not justifying the disobedience. And a lot of people will look to John Hume up the north and say, well, he wasn't disobedient during that time and he lived in Derry. Martin McGuinness joined the IRA. Yeah. Do you know, so why? And not all, like, when you say to people, not all travellers rob, like, ah, yeah, but most of them do. We're never going to get rid of that stigma. Never. We're not.
Sure, even the language you use, like, we want to slag somebody and say, shut up, you knacker.
That's a classist word, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what the upper class would call the working class.
I hear it all the time.
Yeah.
I hear it, and I had this chat with Eileen. When I hear it now, I relate it to my class, the people I grow up with.
That's exactly what it is.
He's a knacker, like Conor McGregor. He's a knacker. He's rich, but he's a knacker. And it grinds on me, really grinds on me. I just find it hard.
But it, Derek, I remember growing up, like, say 18 and 20, 23, 24, and you'd be hanging around, you'd be going out to the same spots every weekend, say, and then you'd be going back to house parties, and there'd be all different classes there, but you'd always hear the upper class calling the working class knackers, and I don't think they meant travelling community, they just meant
full of knackers,
like,
as in, yeah,
do you know what I mean? It's definitely a classist word that they brought in.
You had Tony McGregor on your show.
Yeah,
in
twice.
In the early days.
So we had him on a few times. He wants to do another one on his yacht.
Does he?
Yeah.
Deadly.
Yeah, Tony's a mad thing.
Mad thing?
Yeah.
Like, I still can't get
He was our first guest, actually.
I flicked through and I was having a look, all right. He got some publicity with that video, the coinage.
The coinage.
What's your thoughts on that?
I didn't take it too seriously.
It's mad,
though, isn't it? Social media, when something goes viral and people have opinions and they can get nasty and... Like, do you think he meant it?
I don't give a rat's.
I couldn't give a shite.
I couldn't give a flying fuck.
No.
Like, coinage. I use that term now. I'm non-two-plussed.
Yeah.
I say that. I did. It's part of my vocabulary now. I take the piss out of people. I say, I'm on 2+. You said that.
But you see online as well, like, you see online lately about people talking about gender identification.
Oh, that confuses me.
It confuses me, but I don't care.
I don't care.
If I want to live my life the way I want to live my life, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And if someone wants to live their life, if some man wants to live their life as their woman, go ahead.
I couldn't give a shite.
People go mad about it.
We were down at the office there earlier and the girls in the job flicked out this magazine and it was girls in these school uniforms, right? Long red dress, and they were like, look at this. These girls, they've done their junior session, they got so many results, but people are giving them stick because of the dresses. I mean, mine was boggled. I couldn't see what was wrong. I was like, oh, what's wrong?
It's wrong.
They've done well in their junior. They could go on to be decent human beings in society.
Yeah.
What's the problem?
The social media uproar of things in this day and age is just crazy.
It's a two-edged sword.
It is. And you're on WhatsApp groups and the lads and the girls or whatever WhatsApp group you're in, they all have an opinion about something. And sometimes I just don't care.
Opinions like arseholes. Everyone has one.
Yeah. Do you know, even the gender identification one seems to be the hot topic at the moment in some of the WhatsApp groups I'm in. Like, I don't have that opinion.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care. You
call
you Susan and your name is Frank. If that sound, I'll do it for you.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I couldn't give a shite.
Yeah.
I've other things to be worrying about.
You're on a job. chop your John Thomas off. And yeah, wear toys. Go for it.
Exactly.
What point did you get your round in the pub? If it's your round, it's your round.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I'm confused when it comes to this gender equality and all. I don't know what to say. I don't know what's appropriate. I definitely don't want to hurt anyone's feelings.
Yeah.
I couldn't give a rat's either way.
No, I couldn't care. I
mean, no. Right, we're talking about social media, WhatsApp groups. Yeah. What's your thoughts on Roy Keane, the message going around? Yeah. Stephen Ting Center, what's his name?
Stephen Ward.
Yeah. What's your thoughts on it?
I think it's unfortunate that the WhatsApp thing got out.
Yeah.
I think Ward is very naive.
Yeah.
To think that it wouldn't go out. Maybe he trusted a lot of friends and one of his friends had to hanging him out to dry there.
It's a detailed voice. I thought it was a detailed message, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Very detailed. I'm not sure how we feel about it. I mean, from the angle where we played against Wales, and some people were complaining this whole row with the performance, I think is bullshit. I do think maybe Roy Keane, I idolise Roy Keane.
You do, I'm a Man United supporter.
I absolutely idolise him.
I do, same, I read his books and I think he's deadly.
Yeah, and I just love his... particularly when he was a player, just as like he dragged us to that World Cup in 2002.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I just love his attitude and his standards and stuff like that. Why not for a small nation have those standards? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? We don't deserve someone like him if we're not going to be following his standard. But at the same time, I think he might have an issue with his temper and flipping off.
Yeah.
But at the same time, those incidents occur in all sports clubs all over the world. Like, there's rows all the time, and
of course.
So, I don't know, do I think he should lose his job over it? No. Do I think they should lose their job over the style they play? Probably. There's a bigger argument over them losing their job because of the style they play. But I'm not going to be wasting energy calling for them to lose their jobs because they've just signed a new contract. Like, they're not going to walk unless the next two results are awful. But they're not going to get sacked.
Do you reckon he has a problem with players that are not up to the quality that he was?
Yeah, I think that Danny made that point, and I think he's right. He's like, he has to remember that he played with David Beckham, Jaap Stam, Ryan Giggs, Ruud van Nistelrooy, Cristiano Ronaldo. You know, he's not going to get that at Ireland.
No, but would you think he's thinking that players
should think that they're good, that good?
Yeah. Yeah. It's again what we talked about, attitude. He was like, I don't care if you don't have the greatest talent award, but work hard, turn up.
It's kind of like the Conor McGregor thing as well, isn't it?
I was just thinking that.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I don't have great skills. He does, obviously. He's physiologically outstanding. But he's got a graft. He works like fuck.
It's like the two of them. I love both of them for what they've achieved in sports. But then sometimes the two of them just let you down sometimes.
Yeah, people do say that to me about Conor McGregor. What do you think he does this? And then I go, well, you ask me as a person or as a sports fanatic, or like what he does. You know, I watch him as a sports athlete and I think he's phenomenal. The other stuff outside, I go, you're going to get that.
Yeah.
It's just like anyone in my flats. If you give them a few quid, they're going to be baiting around on a horse. The horse will get turned into a Lamborghini.
Yeah.
And they'll be going over the IB to run in amok.
Yeah, yeah. But the working class person in me is like, because I wouldn't like, honestly,
I wish he wouldn't do some of the things.
Just the flamboyancy of spending the cash and all, you know, documenting on the Mac Life that he closed down Brown Thomas last Christmas, that he closed down Thunderland and all. Like, it's fine, you know, but if I was to come into a bit of, like, I don't believe in the materialistic side of life.
No,
do you know what I mean?
It's not my end game.
You know, it's not like I don't wish to earn $100,000 a year or once I can just eat and have a good time. Like, we're only on earth once. Do you know what I mean?
He's representing the working class community, and sometimes I wish he wouldn't do the things he does, and it brings attention on him, and then they go, it devalues what he has done in the sport. Like, he's put Irish sport on the map. The likes of Roy Keane, the Johnny Giles, and all these people have done well for the sport of Ireland, the Matthew Macklin, the boxing.
Yeah. We kind of won't get recognised for that, though.
No. And I said, I interviewed his doctor, Jules Dalby, and I said, you know, if he was a businessman, and Jules said, well, he is a business, I mean, like a business house of sports, he'd be glorified, he'd be everything. But the fact that, you know...
Yeah. It's just the mainstream media in Ireland just haven't taken to MMA.
He's brilliant. He's brilliant. But look what he did. He's going up here and he's running amok. Yeah. He takes away from it.
Well, putting the trolleys through the bus. When I seen that now, that I was like, oh, Conor, I'm trying to support you. Like,
yeah. You help me out, brother. Help
me out. Do you know what I mean? The two of them, Roy Keane and Conor, let you down sometimes. But I'll never say that publicly, other than this podcast. I'll still be on Twitter putting love hearts up to Roy Keane's face.
Well, that's it. Is what it is. Mm. Your man Jim Nugent, and I don't know, he annoyed me the other day when someone said, what do we not need more of? And he went, podcast in Dublin. And me as an aspiring podcaster.
Did he say that?
Yeah. He went, more podcasts in Dublin. He went, no, Jim. And now he went on. And then he went on to talk about the Roy Keane thing. And he said, do you believe now that the saga in Saipan was more Roy Keane than Mick McCarthy? And they're siding towards Mick McCarthy now because of these WhatsApp groups. Geez. Now, I don't know if he was pissed off because he talked about the podcast. I think I had a hangover.
Well, he's only saying that because podcasts are taking over, so.
And I was saying to me, Sam, for fuck's sake, man, give us a break. Give people a break. If anyone was out there painting, if I was a painter and I'd done really well and there was kids out drawing on the walls, I'd be saying, yeah, go for it, man.
Yeah, but use your influence to a bit better, like. Do you know what I mean? Positivity. If you've got thousands of followers and you're spouting negativity, go and shy.
We don't need any more podcasters in Dublin. I'm delighted. I listen to your podcast and I wish you well. And I'll keep sending your stuff out. And I think I don't give a rat. And I think we should all do that.
Absolutely.
And the world should be full of love and kindness.
Absolutely.
I'm not going all Gandhi on you now or not.
No, but you're dead right. Because Danny used to be a comedian in the Dublin circuit. And he said it became quite clicky.
Hate that.
You know, so
in
he.
In fairness, he doesn't like that.
Yeah, and he stepped away from it. But there is a fear. The only negative, if you wanted to call it negative comment that I'd have about Jim's comment about Dublin podcasts or whatever, is that it kind of becomes clicky. Do you know what I mean? And I hope it doesn't become clicky, but that's just a concern down the road. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, we're all in a small area, you know. Share your guests.
Absolutely. Shared it. Like, and I have to say, the guys from Echo Chamber, Tony Rose, he reached out to me on Twitter. You know, do this with your, when you're publishing stuff, do this, do that. If you need any help. And I was sitting there scratching my head going, I can't believe this fella. This is sound.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it.
Absolutely.
I would do it. I would give anyone a dig out.
Yeah.
But for him to touch base with me and go, you know what, do this, do that. You're meant to do it this way. And I go, that's fucking sound.
Yeah, absolutely. We had the same with Gordon Rochford from those conspiracy guys. Danny
met him in town one night.
Yeah.
And he was telling about my podcast. He said he knew me or whatever. I think he was just blowing smoke up my hole.
Oh, love it. Take it. But Danny, he was a comedian and him and Danny knew each other years. But we've had him on the podcast a few times. I think we're going on his podcast soon enough as well. So but he's so helpful. Like, if he would be wanting to set up your website and encouraging you, and
that's
what you need. Do you know what I mean? Like, now I think he's one of the most listened to podcasts in Ireland because he has, it's all conspiracies, and 500,000 Americans listen to it monthly. Do you know what I mean? So, and he's earning a living off it now as well.
That's deadly.
Yeah.
It's fucking deadly.
We never wanted to earn a living off it. It was just a hobby. I was never wanting to pack in my day job to do this. Do you know what I mean? To do the podcast. It's just a hobby that, when we first set out, we were like, look, 40 people listen to it a week, we'd be laughing, friends and family.
Yeah.
Now it's gone from bleeding 15,000 a month to 45,000 a
that's
month.
That's incredible.
And we don't really, I'd say that's what Jim's afraid of, that all the podcasts are just getting taken over. You can listen to it in your car now, podcasts. Yeah. You can download your phone and set it up in the car.
Like, my podcast listening influences me on my day job. Like, I was listening to today about, you know, positive psychology, listen to the likes of Vivian Raft, blah, blah. And I blend those in because I'm a facilitator and I work with people with disabilities. And I'm able to use those skill sets. Let me listen to Jim and Nobby. Oh, I like that show and all that. But it's not as beneficial to me as a professional.
Because they've got their set.
Yeah.
You never know.
You can learn so much from podcasts.
But guests as well from podcasts, they seem, instead of a radio environment, they seem, then this could be naive on their point of view, but they seem to be a bit more relaxed. And they probably take the attitude, nobody's really going to listen to this. So I'll just kind of let the hair down and talk what I want to talk about.
That's interesting.
Do you know what I mean?
I found people being really relaxed.
Really relaxed. Some, like Danny always says to some, I don't think he said that much lately, but he always says, look, this podcast is going out on Sunday. If you want me to edit it, let me know. And they're like, no.
I get that as well. I'm like, are you sure? I do with professionals, like maybe psychologists and all that they have a business and it could impact another patient, and I'll send it to them and say, listen to that and then get back to me, because I'll send it out then.
Mm.
But the likes of Steve Gunn, Steve Jones, actors, they're like, they're just so good at it. They're just like, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Nah, you're around. I'm killed with that.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah. I think in 160 episodes, I think we've had 3 requests to edit something, and it was only minor, like.
Right,
yeah. Do you know, 3 though out of about 160
that's
episodes.
Savage. I've had one. My mate, she has a business, and she just asked me to take a few bits out.
Yeah.
She was just a bit nervous in it. And that was
But that's the idea of a podcast, is that it's an off the cuff, off the fly conversation. You probably wouldn't get this on radio.
Yeah.
And the length of time, like, we'd had Mairead Farrell on when we came back from a break. And she said, it's the first time I've done something I've enjoyed on radio in years. Like, we're like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, my first interview was Frankie Gaffney, and he came over to me, Gaffney.
Oh, what a
and
legend.
We zoomed H1, and we just plunked it down. The two of us just having the chats. And I was like, I love this. This is exactly what I want to do. Yeah. Like me sitting here with you, I'm just looking at the time there, and we're an hour and 15 minutes. And I'm going, oh, man.
An hour and 50?
An hour and 15.
Jeez, I thought it was nearly 2 hours. Like, what? Hasn't been that long.
No, and I'm like, oh, man, stop, slow down. And I think it's the richness, and it, as me and my mate do say, it's deep, meaningful conversations. We're having DMCs, and it's decent conversation.
Absolutely. And that's the beauty. Frankie's a legend as well.
Yeah.
We had Frankie on. I was only texting him yesterday as well. He's a gent.
Yeah, had him on. Hadn't seen him in a long time.
Oh, you know him, do you?
I got him on. I just texted him on Twitter. He come on. We had an interview. I hadn't seen him in a long time. I hadn't seen him since. And we've been texting back and forth saying, come back on, blah, blah, blah. And I was out on a date one night. And he came into the pub, him and a few others. And yeah, it was an entertaining night.
I'd say so.
Ah, for fuck's sake. It was the crack. He's deadly, lad. Yeah. He's a good crack. He's a
deadly.
Good lad.
Yeah.
Activist, rights, all that stuff. Since we're talking about Frankie Gaffney, what do you think of the Frederick Street thing? It's on social media, these housing. So have you got an opinion on it again?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think I would be of the opinion that civil disobedience is acceptable when you're trying to force the politicians to side with you and change a rule or change a law and stuff like that. Technically speaking, yes, the activists were in a private property. A landlord owned that. But, like, I mean, there's far more things more important. Like, the house. Now, people have said to me, it doesn't matter if the house is laying vacant for 3 years. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were trying, that's what they're trying to highlight. They're trying to highlight the hoarding of empty premises in the country when there's so many thousands homeless. Mm. What better way to do that than do it like this? I thought the images, the optics of the guards facilitating tugs with balaclavas.
Bally's on. I couldn't believe it.
Thought the optics of that was particularly with this country's relationship with balaclavas.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I thought it was disgraceful. And
it was like something from the 1970s.
And the cynic in me was kind of going, Drew Harris is only in the job 2-3 days, and you have the public order unit facilitating tugs.
Like paramilitaries.
Paramilitaries.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
I couldn't believe it.
45% of the politicians in Ireland, whatever, I'm not sure, I heard this from Blind Boys podcast.
67, isn't it?
What, 67%?
Is that an alert?
Yeah, I thought it was 3/4.
Possibly, I could be wrong.
It's a
stupid number.
Stupid.
Yeah.
Now, you were telling me that they're not going to influence on changing things.
Absolutely.
To suit themselves. I
absolutely. But, see, that's the most disappointing thing. I said to the lads on work the other day, do you look up to any politicians? Everyone completely dismissed me. I was like, no. I think that's sad. I think we should have to look up to politicians. They run the country. And I know there's nobody out there to look up to at the moment.
You don't trust anyone.
You don't trust anybody. Like,
still trust in us.
Brian Boy was talking about that figure about politicians being landlords. No doubt that's both sides. Like, no doubt there's a few Sinn Féin lads that are landlords. No doubt that there's...
I think it's right across the board.
It's right across the board. So, I mean, there's just no political will from Fine Gael to make this happen. You look at the 40s, 50s and 60s, the amount of estates that were built when we hadn't got a pot to piss in. And now we're loaded. They're telling us that we're loaded. Yeah. But the amount of scandals and shite that's gone on the last 7 or 8 years, it's embarrassing.
Back to equality.
The cervical chance, the cervical check thing is disgraceful. The chewing babies. Do you know, the list is endless. Like, the housing crisis is phenomenal.
I done an interview there last Friday or Saturday with a microbiologist, Jerry Colleran from Talat IT, where I studied. He was a lecturer of mine. And we were talking about a vaccine called HBV. I had him as a lecturer in 2010, and he was saying, look, we need to give this to young boys because it's passed through sexual intercourse.
Right.
You know, not just girls. Like, boys pass it, so boys have sex with girls. It's a huge part, but they're only giving it to girls. We're now 8 years along, and they're only talking about doing it.
Wow.
And, you know what I mean, you can think in 8 years the amount of cervical cancer, and it's huge, like, cancer among homosexuals because of the HPV virus through anal sex, cancer in the anus, and through genital warts.
That's mental, isn't it?
Yeah, it blew me away. Oh, you said it before.
But then you've got people like Jim Carr saying, don't vaccinate. Do you know? And then the presidential candidate, Gemma O'Doherty, don't vaccinate.
That's dangerous.
Isn't it?
That's dangerous.
There's a lot of anti-vaccinators online.
That's dangerous. That's really dangerous.
Very dangerous. Do you want a presidential candidate pontificating anti-vaccine?
No, give it to the little fella. He's deadly. Yeah. He's dog and all.
Really, oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, geez, see if that Sean Gallagher lad gets in.
I think he'll keep it, won't he?
Well, hopefully.
Michael Day.
I think the presidential, people saying, really far left people saying that it's not a good job. And I think the presidential thing should be respected. Like, I think he does a good job.
I think so.
Obviously, there's elements of that argument where I'm probably being a hypocrite if I'm trying to say I'm a socialist, but Michael Higgins is a socialist as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
Look, do I need a salary of 300 grand a year? No. Do you know? And that would be the only kind of sourness I'd have towards the office of the president.
Same with the FEI president. He's on some
don't
series.
Get me started on that.
That's another thing. So yeah, we're back again. Elitist. And
it's elitist.
Equality
yeah.
in Ireland.
Like, but should the FEI close the AGMs down to the media? They're not even allowed to ask questions.
What?
Yeah, the media don't go are banned from the FEI's AGMs.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Like,
that's nuts.
That's nuts. So there's no accountability from the FEI. None at all.
We need Vivian Raff here to calm us down.
I know,
two
yeah.
activists going on starting to
scratch. I know, yeah.
Getting bricks and put them
in. I'm very pockets. Positive. I'm loving life. I'm very positive.
Yeah, I know. Look, we're an hour and 20 minutes into this, so I'm mindful of taking up all your time. What would you like people to take from you from this interview? What's the one thing you'd like them to take?
God.
That would change the world.
I don't know. I guess if I had... I'd love for the public to change their perceptions on people with disabilities. I hate being called an inspiration because I just live my life. Do you know what I mean? The world wasn't built for wheelchair users, so therefore don't call me inspiring because I'm doing what you do, only I have to do it with a bit of a challenge. Sometimes that can come across as patronising. But at the same time, if I'd like to be called an inspiration, if I inspired you to do something, tell me, like, you know, I did a Tesco Christmas ad 2 years ago, and there was a great message sent into Tesco from a parent with a kid with disabilities, and how she was inspired by the ad that she seen someone in a wheelchair on national television at Christmas time, because people with disabilities celebrate Christmas as well. You know, that was amazing, and to me that was job done. Do you know what I mean? I remember filming that ad, and I demanded that the wheelchair be in shot. I said to the director, he wanted a scene where I'm on my bed, and I says, and he was taking my chair away. I said, oh no, that's staying there. You have to have the wheelchair in shot, bud. Yeah. I'm a wheelchair user, like.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh yeah, sorry, I didn't think about it, but you're spot on. Do you know what I mean? Oh, so.
It's not about the visual.
I'm actually waffling. I haven't really answered your question.
You'll get there.
Yeah. What do I want people to take away? I'd like people to possibly change their attitudes to people with disabilities. What else?
I would wish, we're talking about people with disabilities, and I always find this, I wish people would see the person before they see the disability.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I find that when I'm dealing with people, they seem to see the disability. Oh, he has a brain injury. Oh, he's in a wheelchair. But not like, are they sound and we have the crack and, you know, he's just this gas fella. Or he's your man with the disability. Or I find that a little bit. Maybe because I'm in the environment. Probably that's not fair. But that's what I would like.
No, but that's an okay aspiration to have, though. Do you know what I mean? I would like to live in a world where I didn't have to plan a weekend if I was going into town. Do you know what I mean? Plan it out.
Yeah.
Where you yourself, Matt, you wouldn't have to think about what pub you're going to. You just go, oh, come on, we go into that boozer. And I'd be like, my mates are like, come on, we go into that boozer. And I'd be like, does that have a wheelchair toilet? Oh, no, it doesn't. I wasn't thinking. And it's like, right, we go for one, but like, I'll have to move somewhere else if I want to be able to go to the Jacks. Like,
yeah,
do you know?
And then you become a bore. You feel like you're bored.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. I still haven't answered your question, have I? No. What do I want people to take away from this? Don't know. Listen to What's the Story podcast every week.
Oh, you fucking rootless bastards. I knew you'd show your true colours. Nah, look, you're an advocate for people with aspirations to do whatever they want in life, whether they're a wheelchair or not. And it's not about whether you're in a wheelchair or whether you're not. It's just do good things in life.
Yeah, don't, like, in all walks of life, just don't be a prick.
Be a fucking
prick. Don't be judging people for how they live their life. Do you know what I mean? If someone wants to live the life the way they want to live it,
Who gives a rat's?
Yeah, does it affect you remotely? No.
Yeah, if you want to be whatever, be whatever.
Absolutely.
Right, well, Graham Merrigan, I can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
From one podcast or two. Well, I'm an apprentice podcaster. Yes. You're a senior veteran. Thanks for your generosity. I mean this from the bottom of my heart. It means a lot. Like, I'm very, very grateful.
No problem. Anytime. Legend. Thanks, Matt. Anytime.
Okay, so there wraps up another tremendous interview. As always, I'd like to thank my supports, Niall Riley from Rooney Media. Niall has been in the graphic design business the last 20 years and producing quality work. For the last couple of years, they've been the chief graphic design for the college prospectus at UCD. I've been using his services the last, 10-15 years, producing posters for health and fitness stuff, and always produces quality work. So check those guys out. Also, my old pal Carolyn Harvey from ISA Nutrition. For anybody interested in dropping body fat, gaining muscle, maintaining a healthy body weight, getting rid of some nutritional ailments, she's your woman. If you're also interested in competing in bodybuilding competition, male or female, I would recommend her. I am currently working with Carolyn Harvey and the success has been phenomenal. I have done a review already and I plan to do more. But if nutrition and strength condition, that area is something that you'd like to get coaching or advice on, I would check it out. And the prices are really, really good. Really good. Better than a lot that's out there. So I recommend you check her out. Also, Miel Crew, Kevin Doyle, sound editing and just producing and just support. Absolutely legend, Kevin. And Miel, mate, Aaron Kyo, social media. Lads, you are brilliant. The team would be lost without you. Okay, so that just leaves me to thank my listeners, thanks a lot for listening. I will urge you, please share this with family and friends. We are on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, all the kind of podcast mediums that are out there. We're on them right the way across. We also have a YouTube channel, so check us out on that. Please go on to iTunes. Please subscribe. Please leave a delicious review. We love it. Absolutely love it. So that's all the plugging I'm going to do for this podcast. As always, I will say to you, please show yourself compassion. Please spend some time with love and kindness in your life. Because if you are kind and loving to yourself, you will project that to the rest of the world. And if we all could do that a small percentage of our day, the place would be a nice, nice place to live. Right, wherever you are in the world, mind yourself. Have a great day. Bye-bye.